I'm Christopher Light, and this is The Connection. Do you have trouble keeping your cubism, your dadaism, and your abstract impressionism straight when you're walking through an art gallery? At cocktail parties, do you just smile and nod when the conversation turns to social constructivism, logical positivism, or Benthamite utilitarianism? Does reductionism mean to you boiling down a pot of veal shanks to make a good stock? Can you tell Occam's razor from Pascal's wager? Could you sort anything with Kant's categories? Could you build with Islam's pillars? Do Buridan's ass, Zeno's paradox, and punctuated equilibrium sound like they describe, say, the story of your life? Are you confused between Levi Strauss, the guy who invented blue jeans, and Levi Strauss, the guy who invented structuralism? Our guest today, the writer Chris Roman, has all the answers. He followed his categorical imperative to compile a world of ideas, a tell-all dictionary of important thinkers, theories, and movements. We're talking this hour about the ideas that have defined history and still shape our lives, whether we know what they mean or not. Connection listeners, what would you put in your dictionary of ideas? What are the 10 concepts that you've brought with you into the new millennium? The phone is 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK makes the ism connection. All the big ideas that you get confused about with the writer Chris Roman, whose book is called A World of Ideas, and it's sort of the answer to every anxiety. Chris Roman, welcome.
Hi there.
I wish you'd do this Letterman style, as if an idea were a joke. It doesn't have to be funny, but work back from number 10 to number 1 of the really, really big ones in your mind.
Okay. This was an interesting process for me, because obviously my book is in alphabetical, not numerical order. But it was interesting to think, well, what are the top 10 ideas that I would suggest here? And so here they are. Here's my top 10 anyway. Starting with number 10, abstraction. I've chosen abstraction here because, abstraction is abstracting the essential characteristics from something, identifying the universal within the particulars. And I'm interested in that because it's perhaps the earliest intellectual concept, and it's the basis of all of math, a lot of philosophy, and a great deal of modern art. It applies. So
is it an idea?
It's a concept. It's a way of ordering the universe, ordering reality. So in that sense, it's not an idea as in a bright idea, but it's one of the fundamental concepts on which we've based math and philosophy and other things.
Okay.
At number 9, I would place feminism. And the best definition of feminism I've seen, or the one I enjoy the most, is the bumper sticker I've seen a couple of times that says, "Feminism is the radical notion that women are people." Or as Rebecca West said in a quotation that I include in the book.
I love that. Yeah, go ahead.
People call me a feminist, she said, whenever I express sentiments that differentiate me from a doormat or a prostitute. Feminism is also a very old impulse, but only became an intellectual and political movement in the last couple of centuries, and is obviously central to a lot of thinking these days. Moving right along, number 8. Socialism, the idea that wealth should belong to the people who create it, also a very old idea, but one that the term itself wasn't coined until the early 19th century and became a conscious movement in that century.
That's a pretty neat distillation of it, wealth to the people who create it. Was that yours?
Yes.
Good line.
Yeah, thank you. I'd also put off to the side in the socialism box here, maybe number 8A, communism, small c communism, the idea that all property should be held in common. It's a subset of socialism.
Okay. That's 8.
Then, of course, number 7 is capitalism. It's one step higher on the list because it's been more successful so far, largely because of its great productive capacity and because of its economic power, its greater economic and political success. Number 6, are we ready for?
Yeah, what's the idea in capitalism?
Okay. Capitalism, of course, is a thing as well as an idea. It's a way of doing things. But capitalism incorporates the idea of enterprise, free enterprise, the free market. This is an idea in the sense of someone's idea about the way things should be, should work. The idea of capitalism as the way we should organize our economy.
Okay. Number six.
Number six, relativity. Einstein's theory of relativity changed our way of understanding the cosmos. And moving on to number five, evolution. Darwin's theory of evolution changed our way of understanding life on Earth and our role in it. So those two together have really focused the way we think about things in this century.
Number four.
Number four, I would place the Golden Rule. Not just because of the formulation that we commonly think of it as the Christian, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, but because it's so universal. It's actually been called the universal moral injunction, the basis of all ethics. And even though we know the New Testament version the best, it's thought that it's probably the first statement of it was by Confucius, who put it in the reverse way. What you do not want done to yourself, do not do unto others. Mm. And in some ways, my favorite formulation of it is from the Jewish tradition. Rabbi Hillel, the first century Jewish scholar, was challenged to summarize the Torah in the time during which he could stand on one leg. Whereupon he raised one foot and said, "What is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbor. That is the whole Torah. All the rest is commentary." I like that.
Yeah. Number three.
Moving on to number three, I would put freedom. Again, because it's a universal idea, but it has loads and loads of different kinds of definitions, and there are many disagreements over what constitutes freedom, over what kind of criteria are necessary under which freedom can exist. That is, for instance, on the one hand, freedom can only be guaranteed by giving individuals the greatest possible individual freedom. But then, on the other hand, the Marxist idea that freedom can only be is only possible when there is when nobody in society is exploited or has less power or opportunity than anyone else. Of course, the idea of freedom refers to both political independence and personal autonomy, and in both senses revolves around the question of who or what controls us, an external force or our individual and collective will. And then, of course, as a subset to that, we have the idea of free will, which is a great religious debate.
A long argument.
Yes.
Number two.
Number two, reason. The idea that truth is accessible through the application of rational thought. And for me, I think reason is probably the central idea in Western philosophy, partly because so much of Western philosophy has been about the application of rationality and reason, but also because it's a, well, you might call it a cluster concept that gathers many other ideas around it and contrasts with two major, quite different ideas. On the one hand, reason versus revelation, the idea that ultimate truth is only revealed by God and not by logic. Which, of course, was the central conflict and question in the European Middle Ages and continues today. And then reason is, on the other hand, contrasted with empiricism, the search for truth through experience and experiment, which is the basis of modern science.
Okay. Three cheers for reason. And now number one.
Well, I would have placed reason number one, except that, of course, there is another idea, as they say, than which there is nothing greater, and that is God. And I don't mean just Jehovah here, but not just the anthropomorphic God, thank you. But the near universal belief in a power, being, impulse, or principle that transcends humanity and is either greater than the universe or, in some formulations, the same as the universe, equivalent to the universe. That's my top ten anyway, today.
That's terrific. It's a terrific start. Chris Roman is our guest. His book is called A World of Ideas. It's a dictionary of all kinds of things that you blink at and hope the subject will change. Can I just throw three? They all begin with E, sort of ideas that I never really get my head around. Expressionism, existentialism, and entropy. That's just in one letter. But I invite connection listeners to do it too. What are the heavy concepts or the lightweight fads that still puzzle you? Existentialism, people have been throwing that at me for 40 years, and I still don't really have a good grip on it.
Existentialism is one of the most interesting ideas that I came across in doing this book. Maybe I could pause for a minute and explain that how I came to write this book. And I want to give a disclaimer or a claimer right away that I wrote this book because it's a book that I wanted to have. It's a book that I need. I'm not an expert. I'm not an academic. I'm a freelance writer who's interested in a great number of things. I'm curious about a lot of things. And I have a really bad memory. And I wanted to have a reference
book. You sound too much like me. Go ahead.
I wanted to have a book that would help me remember the things I learned in college and now don't remember so well, if at all. And
so you can understand The Simpsons, for example.
Precisely.
Yeah. This is a refresher course before you watch The Simpsons.
In some cases, it has been putting this book together has been a great refresher course for me, and I've learned a lot new, and I've remembered a lot that I used to know or that I should have learned. I put the book together. I guess I don't even consider myself the author of the book so much as the compiler, because I had the help of a lot of scholars who really do know this stuff, putting together the ideas that are going to be in the book, the list of entry terms, sorting out what was going to be in the book among all the possible entry terms. There are something like 450 now. And I had a lot of help from grad students in the particular
fields.
You
make it very manageable. It's user-friendly. But go back to existentialism.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it so amorphous for me?
Well, I can't tell you that. But the thing that interested me about existentialism is because I had always had the impression that it was a very bleak philosophy. It's based on the idea that there is no God. There is no intrinsic purpose in the universe. We are here with no inherent meaning and have to make meaning for ourselves. And when I started looking into that, I thought, well, that's not a pessimistic philosophy. It's a very hopeful philosophy. I like the idea that, well, so what? Here we are on this rock. We don't know if there's a higher power out there. We don't know if there's any purpose or if there's just some chance germ that has arisen in the universe, and here we are as a result of that. And because we don't know that, because the universe is absurd, that is, without any intrinsic meaning, the meaning we make for ourselves, as the existentialists say, making an authentic life from our own will and power, is a very, very hopeful and, well, to use an overused term, empowering idea. So I'm actually quite attracted to the idea of existentialism, not as...
Who are your existentialist heroes? And who do we credit with the idea?
I guess I'd go back to the founder, I guess he's generally considered, that is Kierkegaard, who was the first to say, well, he started out, I guess my impression is that he came to this because he was tired of the Christian church being so rational. He said, you know, you can't prove the existence of God. Faith is a leap of faith, as he put it, and good for you if you believe. Because you're saying, well, I don't know, but I'm going to believe. And that act of faith is an act of strength. And that's for me, where existentialism started and what it still comes down to. Whether you want to believe in God or not, you create your own reality, your own meaning.
Quick segue to expressionism. And does it have to be German?
It doesn't have to be German, but it helps if it is. Expressionism.
As opposed to Impressionism or Post-Impressionism.
Well, Expressionism, as far as I understand it, is as opposed to Impressionism. Impressionism was looking at the world and distilling your impressions from it. And Expressionism is looking inside and expressing those feelings into a work of art. That's why Expressionist art and cinema and that kind of thing is so tortured and dreamlike, because it's about internal turmoil externalized.
Okay. Last E word for me, entropy.
Well, now here we go. This is where I open my book and look up the term, because I don't want to make a mistake here. I am certainly not a scientist. And in a lot of ways, the science entries were the most interesting and the hardest for me to put together, because I have so little background in science. I had great assistance from one particular science advisor, in particular a retired physics professor named Al Stewart.
Give us the entropy bumper sticker and we'll go to call.
Okay. Well, the first sentence of my entropy entry says that entropy is a measure of the disorder in a system, the idea that natural processes tend to move from relative order toward disorder.
Breakdown, in a word. Breakdown is the rule.
Yeah. In general, entropy means that whatever comes together falls apart.
Life in the breakdown lane. 1-800-423-8255 makes the World of Ideas connection with the writer Chris Roman, who's got it all in here. You'll be armed, well-armed for any conversation, any connection after this one. 1-800-423-8255, the ISM connection. 1-800-423-TALK. Ed is calling from Canton, New York.
Hello.
Hello, Ed. Welcome.
Hi, Ed.
Thank you for having me on. I was wondering if you included the concept of synthesis or synergy in your book, the tendency for the whole that's being put together to be more than the sum of the parts?
Yes, indeed. In some ways, certainly there's an entry on holism, the whole idea that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
Hmm. Right.
There are quite a few. Synthesis, I suppose, in some ways a cluster concept, as I was talking about before. Certainly dialectic is based on the idea of synthesis coming out of thesis and antithesis, two competing points of view or conflicts coming together in a synthesis that is the combination of both of them, but also something greater.
Right. And I was wondering, did you actually end up attributing that to any particular author, I guess, if you would call it that?
Attributing what to?
The idea of synthesis, that step beyond abstraction.
Well, the dialectic, begins with Socrates and continues with Hegel and Marx. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, in a way, yes.
Uh-huh. What's your sense of what synthesis is all about?
Well, I guess I get my main view of synthesis from a novel by Brunner, where actually there were people who were employed in synthesis, and their main function was to research things, not for their own knowledge, but just to find connections, I guess, and put them together and send them along to others who would buy those things in that field.
I don't know. How do we rule on something like this? It sounds as if you know a lot about it, Ed. Let me just go back. You mentioned synergy. Synergy is kind of a sell word. Tina Brown left magazines to do magazines plus books, movies on the whole is greater than the sum of the parts theory. Is that an idea? And is it a scientific notion? I'm asking you, Ed.
Oh, well, I would think that synergy is the idea of synthesis applied to humans, to the actions of humans, as opposed to the abstract concepts.
Mm-hmm. That That makes sense to me. Synergy is not an entry in my book, but certainly, you know, again, it applies to any number of ideas and fields.
Ed, thank you. 1-800-423-8255. The World of Ideas Connection. Michael is on the line. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hi. I think a few other very influential ideas would be anarchism, the belief that people were not born to be ruled or to rule. The idea of the future, which is a relatively new one, the idea that things could be different than they are now. This relates to abstraction and also to the entire topic, the idea of the difference between the map and the territory, that the universe is different from our models for it and that they work up to a point, but that we should always be careful of where that point is.
Explain the map of the territory idea, Michael.
Well, a simple example from physics is that Newton's laws of motion are perfectly good for doing things like sending spacecraft out to the furthest reaches of the solar system, but it's not reality itself. It's a way of describing a certain set of conditions within reality. And that if you start to go fast enough or there's enough energy in a given locality, then Newton's laws don't work so well. Hmm. The idea that all our isms are just that, are just creations of our own, and they're not Platonic ideals that live out there somewhere.
We fit this all under the heading of abstraction, don't we? The question of sort of substitution, symbolic representation.
But I guess the idea would be the limits of abstraction, or the idea that, which I think is, again, fairly new, or at least popular only recently, that our abstractions aren't necessarily reality.
Yeah, all right. I'm with you,
sure.
Chris Roman.
Sure, yeah. I think that's very interesting that certainly in your space-time example, you're talking about relativity, Einsteinian physics, as opposed to Newtonian physics. But the idea that our ideas, what we think, what we perceive, create in our minds, is not reality, is something that I came across again and again in putting this book together. The conflict between materialism and idealism, that kind of thing.
Michael, you want a last word?
Well, yeah, that there's a lot of this involved in relativity itself, where you can say a particular coordinate system is convenient for doing a certain set of calculations, but if you need to do another set, you may need to use a different coordinate system. And I think this also relates to the psychological idea of imprinting, because I think people tend to imprint on particular reality systems at particular points in their lives and generally stick with those. But there's a difference between that and reality.
You bet. You believe what you believe for reasons that very often you don't even understand yourself.
Interesting.
I thought that what you said about the future was very interesting, the idea that things are going to change in the future. The entry in my book on progress is all about that, that there is the possibility of progress, and the idea that the history of the world is one of progress, from simplicity to complexity, from bad to good, from imperfection to perfection. And one of the things that I found interesting in putting this together was the difference between that kind of view, the idea of beginning, middle, and end of history, as opposed to Eastern philosophies that see the time and the universe as cyclical, either never ending or, more commonly, beginning, going through a cyclical change of development, ending and then beginning again, that there is no absolute end of history.
Who invented the idea of progress?
I guess Condorcet is primarily associated with that, but it's an idea that's been going on for quite some time. It's natural for humans to think that things are going to progress and change and become perfect, because we certainly live in an imperfect world.
A World of Ideas with Chris Roman. Allison is on the line.
Good morning.
Morning, Allison.
Hi there.
Hi. I think that the book sounds really neat.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. And I was just coming up with a fourth E, and that was evil. But I don't know if I like the sound of that word because it's in a way too biblical. But I was just sort of wondering if there was a way to include evil or badness or maybe even just morality or intellectual conundrums, or do you know what I'm saying?
The idea, evil as an idea.
Evil as an idea. You know, this is one of the we're getting into to the place where we're talking about the in and out list, because evil was on my short list for the book and it didn't quite make it. But it is covered in the book, especially in the ideas, the dualistic cosmologies of, for instance, Zoroastrianism, the idea that the universe is a conflict between the forces of good and evil, darkness and light. It's not just a Christian or even Judeo-Christian concept. It's quite universal.
Hmm. Chris Robin is our guest. He has composed a dictionary, virtually, a sort of intellectual dictionary, called A World of Ideas, Old, New, Big, Small, Good, Bad. And it's a kind of handbook, whether you're going to a party or trying to continue your education. We'll be right back after a short break. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com. From Boston. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is the World of Ideas Connection. Big and little ideas, good and bad, heavy and light. What are the ones that puzzle you? What are the ones you want to sell? The phone's 1-800-423-8255 with Chris Roman, a writer who, for his own protection, started compiling this book of ideas. Ideas people, too. I mean, there's a person behind a lot of the really big ones. I wish you'd do a kind of Letterman-esque top 10 idea people that we're contending with, whether we know it or not.
Sure. Of course, a lot of the people that could be on this top 10 list are implied by the top 10 ideas that we went through before. For instance, socialism and Marx, relativity and Einstein, evolution and Darwin, as we said. But under feminism, there are loads of foremothers of feminism. Mary Wollstonecraft from the late 18th century through Elizabeth Cady Stanton and up to Simone de Beauvoir, the great foremother of the modern feminist movement. Under reason, that central idea that we talked about before, there's everybody from Socrates and Plato to Thomas Aquinas to Voltaire. But just for fun, I put together a top 10 list that's pretty ad hoc, and I'd be interested in seeing how your listeners might respond or complain about it. But these are perhaps in no particular order, some of the thinkers who I think influenced the way we think today in particular. And I'd start with number 10, Karl Marx, who inspired probably the most influential political theory and social movements of the 20th century, followed by number 10, Adam Smith, on the other hand, who in some ways invented capitalism via his theory of free markets and free enterprise. Number 8, I'd put John Locke, the great theorist of liberal democracy. Mm. Number 7, Galileo, not just because he was the champion of the Copernican solar system, but through his mathematical approach to scientific inquiry was the primary instigator of the scientific revolution. Number 6, Soren Kierkegaard, the first existentialist, as we were talking about before, who taught us to see the world as fundamentally absurd and without intrinsic meaning, but in which we make meaning via our own will, not reason. Number 5, I want to put Gandhi, the prophet of moral and political power of nonviolence, love, not only as a concept, as a way of life, but as a tool and a weapon, and who proved that can work, and who likewise influenced many of the late 20th century social movements, not least of which was, of course, Dr. King and the Civil Rights Movement in the United States. Hmm. Number four, Albert Einstein, who changed our way of looking at the universe. Number three, Freud, who changed our way of thinking and looking at our own natures. Number two, Aristotle, who changed our way of thinking about everything, really. And he was the first great polymath, I guess. He thought about everything, influenced the entire Western worldview and mindset, and was considered the major authority in the West, and at least until the Renaissance, on everything. Mm. Physics, to biology, to ethics and logic, to politics and art. Just the ultimate all-round thinker, and still we can sense the echoes of Aristotelian thought in our own worldviews and mindsets. And I guess parallel to my number one idea of God is I can't just say one person, but all of the great prophets and preachers of world religions, Jesus, Muhammad, and Buddha, Augustine and Aquinas in Christianity, Ibn Rushd, who we call Averroes, the great Islamic thinker, who first brought up the idea that reason and revelation are not mutually exclusive. Luther and Calvin for the Protestant Reformation, Maimonides, the great medieval Jewish thinker, all of what you might call God's mouthpieces. They'll share the number one spot.
With the assumption that they're more alike than different.
Absolutely. One interesting... I should say I'm not a religious person myself. I'm agnostic. I don't believe, but I'm not going to say that that anybody's belief is false. I'm certainly not a fundamentalist, a non-religious fundamentalist any more than I approve of religious fundamentalism.
Is agnosticism an idea in the book?
Agnosticism is not an idea in the book. It's been interesting to me to find what people look for in the book. A lot of people pick up the book when they're first given it or buy it, and they say, "Okay, let me look up postmodernism, see what it says there." The ideas that people first look for, and I've been very gratified that most of the ideas that people look for first are there. But recently a friend looked up atheism and agnosticism, and they're not there. There's a lot of talk about God, and there's references to non-belief in God, but that's for the second edition.
Pascal's Wager is in, and we may come back to that. Our guest is Chris Roman, whose book is called A World of Ideas. 1-800-423-8255 makes the heavy concept, the ism connection. Michael is calling from a car phone.
Yes.
Hello, Michael.
Yes, I have a question involving some of the scientific ideas that have come up, and sometimes how they get applied to non-scientific areas of society. And what made me think about this was when you were talking about entropy a little bit earlier, which I think everyone takes this very sometimes narrowly defined scientific idea and says, well, my life is falling apart, it must be empty. It's probably the most, the biggest example. I think some people tend to do that with the Big Bang, and maybe stretch them for a little more analytical value than they're worth. And I just wanted to hear your opinions on that.
On exactly what, Michael? On the real meaning of entropy?
Or the
turning science into psychobabble?
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's an interesting question. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, certainly we get ideas that come up into the air, entropy, just like that, that people don't really understand. And that's one of the things that I'm interested in finding out what these terms are really all about, so that we can, we get an idea of, so we can find out what it's been expanded into. Certainly the idea of my life is falling apart, it must be entropy, is not what entropy really means, but there is a connection there. And I find that really interesting.
Connectionism.
Yes.
1-800-423-8255. Michael, thank you. Steve is calling from Williamsburg, Massachusetts.
Hello.
Hello, Steve. Welcome.
Hi there.
Hi. I had two questions, if I might, but let me start with the first. It deals with technology. I'm curious whether technology has influenced the great ideas of the world. So much has changed in the last 20 or 30 years. Are there some significant ideas that have grown out of those changes in technology, or are ideas somehow more enduring than that and not affected so much by changes in the forms of dissemination?
Well, my answer, I guess, would be yes and no. And there's really two answers to that. Marx, of course, thought that that ideas and changes grew out of technology, as in the way people live, the material conditions of people's lives and especially work lives, and the changes in technology influence changes in society because of the way they influence the way people are living and the way people are responding to their circumstances.
Always for the better?
Well, Marx's idea was that people should act according to that, always for the better. But no, not necessarily. The second answer I'd give to what you brought up, which is really interesting, your question about have technological changes in the last 30, 50 years, whatever, influenced the way we think about things? Absolutely. The idea of cybernetics has changed certainly the way we think about a lot of things. The interaction of self-regulating systems, the fact of the electronic revolution has changed the way we're thinking about doing our work.
If I may, the second question very, very quickly.
Sure, Steve, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I remember in college being very frustrated by a professor's assertion, maybe a conundrum, I'm not quite sure, that there are no new ideas in the world, that everything that could be thought of has been thought of by someone at some time, so there really is no more room for original thought.
And you were frustrated by that because you don't agree with it?
I didn't agree with it at the time, but I've never been sure if he's wrong.
Hmm. Well, what's your sense? Do you identify any new ideas that are really new?
Well, it's hard to know. If you know, when you talk about someone at some time thinking about something, that's a lot of thoughts. It's hard to rule out that something that may seem original to us, like a software program, for example, that seems really new and different, hasn't been somewhere along the line conceived of by an engineer or a technician in some dark lab at 3 a.m.
Well, I guess I'd distinguish between ideas of that sort, inventions, bright ideas, and concepts. People, I tell people I've published a book, a dictionary of ideas, and they say, "Oh, is plumbing in there?" I say, "That's a great idea, but it's not in the book." But
it's a very interesting question.
Yeah.
Whether every concept has flashed through the human mind someplace in some language. Ecclesiastes says there's nothing new under the sun.
I guess you'd have to say that there are new ideas. For instance, relativity, the idea that space and time are one, the idea that gravity is not the attraction of large bodies, but the bending of space and time because of movement between them. That's a new idea. That was revolutionary. Whether ideas about our human nature, whether there are any brand new ideas about that, that you could make an argument on either side.
1-800-423-8255 is the way to make the argument. 1-800-423-TALK joins the World of Ideas connection. Mike is on the line.
Hi, Chris.
Hello, Mike. Welcome.
I'd like to talk about Thomas Jefferson and the Declaration of Independence and his ideas of the laws of nature and nature's God and unalienable rights.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know, Marx didn't believe there was such a thing as unalienable rights. And the idea that we have, God gave us certain rights, endowed by a creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Would I be correct in saying I believe that's a religious statement? Can you prove to me that it isn't by using the laws of nature?
I have no interest in proving to you that it isn't. Jefferson was a very religious man. He was a deist. He didn't subscribe to traditional Christianity, but he did believe that those rights were God-given. I don't think we have an argument there.
Okay, then can I then just a more practical thing? Then if someone started to teach the Declaration of Independence in the public school, would it be unconstitutional because it was a religious belief?
I don't believe that teaching religion in the public school is a contradiction, is a violation of the separation of church and state. And I think that my own opinion is that people have really gotten that confused, that the intention of the founders was not to keep any mention of religion out of public life, but to keep the government from establishing religion. That's what the First Amendment says. There shall be no establishment of religion. The government cannot tell you to worship or not to worship, or if you're going to worship, what kind of worship you're going to engage in. But I think it's really silly when schools don't teach anything about comparative religion because they don't want to be caught establishing religion. I think the two things are quite different, and it's inappropriate to not include religion in a liberal arts curriculum.
Mike, I hope that does it. Thank you. 1-800-423-8255. Stephen is on the line.
Chris?
Hello, Stephen. Welcome.
Hi. I'm here with a two-year-old who has the flu, so I'm not sure he's going to let me operate on such a high level of abstraction.
There's an idea, a two-year-old with a flu.
An idea. Time has come, and I hope it goes soon. I just had a question. Since your guest included reason in the top 10, I'm wondering where he puts the imagination as a faculty, whether that's a subset of revelation, a secularized version of it. I see it as a very important shift in thinking in Western culture that, of course, another way of describing it is romanticism.
Absolutely. That's a very good question. And certainly reason is not just logic,
right.
I think.
So did the Elizabethans.
Right, sure. So the idea that you can come to truth by thinking about it also includes the idea of imagination, not just empirical investigation or totally rational thought.
Stephen, do you want to follow up?
Seems to have something unbidden about it, whereas even reason as sort of higher consciousness seems to be more, I don't know, a product of the will rather than something that, I mean, I think of the more modern version of the unconscious, which is a concept that describes or explains the imagination in a new way.
Yes, as you say, romanticism was certainly set against reason as in logical reason. Romanticism completely devoted to the free play of the imagination, irrational thought. And the unconscious is, you're right, it plays right into there. The unconscious is all about the irrational thought and the idea that our deepest irrational impulses can come to the surface in various ways, sometimes creative, sometimes not.
Stephen, thank you. 1-800-423-8255, The World of Ideas, with the author Chris Roman. Tad is on a cell phone.
Yes, hello.
Welcome, Tad.
Hi there.
The question is very simple. It's about art and maybe music more specifically as an idea or a concept. And the thing is that music has been in man's heart and soul since the beginning, whether it's just basic rhythm or sounds. And right up through the current history, right up to the Beatles, how much it affected the 20th century. Could you comment on that, please?
It's funny about music because what you say is absolutely right. It's so much part of our nature, and it's up there with reason. People say reason is what separates us from the animals, and even though whales sing and wolves howl, music in our sense is really unique, and it's deep and it's important, and it's irrational, but it's also mathematical. But it's not a concept in the sense that I would call it. It's part of our being. Do you want to say something more about how you feel about this?
It's such an interesting subject, and to me, it's always, Tad, it's the test in all these studies of mind and how we work, is whether people can explain music. It's almost impossible.
Well, right, but music itself is something that is spontaneous in itself, but at the same time, somebody had to think of it at some point.
Well, and somebody had to hear it and then write it down, whether that's thinking about it.
And that takes us right back to what we were talking about just before, inspiration and imagination. And who knows where music comes from in us. Before I became an author, I was a songwriter.
Really?
So my life was music. And I can't say for the life of me where those tunes came from.
Yeah, nobody can.
If I was a religious man, I would say from God. So whatever that impulse is, that's where it is.
Tad, thank you. 1-800-423-8255. Alexander is on the line.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
A couple things you said sort of prompted my call today. One, it was you listed the idea of freedom, I believe, among your top 10.
That's content. Right.
And in the subset of freedom, you mentioned free will. So the part A of my question is, by mentioning that, you sort of indicate that will is a given. And my question is will a given or is will simply an idea? And related to that, when you gave your list of top 10 people or thinkers, you failed to mention Nietzsche, who is somebody I'm quite interested in. And he was very interested in the idea of will, primarily because he also thought morality was an idea. And the idea of will and morality are connected in the sense that will is what makes it possible to hold people culpable. If one has a will, one can make choices. And that is really what undergirds the idea of morality, which, of course, Nietzsche traces all the way back to Plato and the dialectic. I just wanted to get your thoughts on whether or not you thought will could be labeled an idea and whether or not you thought morality could be labeled an idea.
Absolutely. Will is certainly an idea, and the idea of free will is all about whether we have it or not, whether our will is our own or if we're just following the dictates of a divine being or the implacable laws of cause and effect or whatever. So certainly the idea of whether or not we have will or there is any such thing as will is a debatable idea. As far as morality goes, I suppose it's an idea, per se, that I don't think there's much argument about the idea that everyone feels that there is some kind of universal moral law, that whether it's divinely inspired or we just intuitively sense it. That's I guess behind why I put the golden rule on that list, because almost every culture has that law somewhere in it about how we treat each other. And I think that most people would take it as a given that is a should, that we should treat each other well.
Chris Roman, it's fascinating to me how quickly people respond to just a general invitation to talk about ideas. That's fascinating. It's a wonderful book, too. We didn't even get to critical theory, literary theory, queer theory, all the structuralisms, deconstructions, post-structuralism that fascinate me, and I never get straight. They're all in the book, I should say, and maybe we'll come back to them. It's been a pleasure. Chris Roman's book is called A World of Ideas, A Dictionary of Important Theories, Concepts, Beliefs, and Thinkers. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. And
thank you
for
very
the callers,
much.
Too. We had help today from George Hicks, Thomas Terry, Rebecca Smuckler, and Kim Bichari. The Connection is produced by a host of great thinkers like Catherine Bidwell, Hitesh Hattie, John Holt, Amy McDonald, and Keith Shields. Our senior thinker is Mary McGrath. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston. We'll be right back.
Cassettes of The Connection are available for $15, including shipping and handling. To order, call 1-800-909-9287. That's 1-800-909-9287.
Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation. PRI, Public Radio International. From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Legal Seafoods, where all the seafood is inspected at their quality control center under federal guidelines. Legal Seafoods, if it isn't fresh, it isn't legal.